Welcome to our village board meeting, and I'll ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Johnson.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis.
Here.
President Adusi.
Here. Can I get an agenda? I don't have one. Okay, thanks. Okay. All right, so we did that. If I can ask everyone to please stand to do the Pledge of Allegiance. I should know this by heart. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You should know all of this by heart. All right, so we have two public comments. Mindy. Mindy, I think I see you on there. So you're up, Mindy? Mindy Creedy?
I'm here.
Okay. You have the floor.
Thank you. The last meeting was very well done, and I appreciate all of your attention to investing in River Forest. I left a couple of meetings in the chat room. Hopefully you can address them. Moving on to my comments for tonight. I'm disturbed by the January 13th edition of the special e-news message. The message endorsed Dominicans' Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation program. Using the embedded hyperlink, residents were invited to join a series of meetings to understand their whiteness and white privilege. Understanding white privilege doesn't sound like racial healing. It sounds like indoctrination and discrimination. I request the village board to revisit its covenant with Dominicans' Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation program. I also ask that the author of this e-news letter apologize for insinuating River Forest is systemically racist. Please give the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Advisory Group to identify if and where barriers exist in River Forest for any reason, including but not limited to race. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. All right, the next up is Phyllis.
Hi there. Sorry, Phyllis Rubin. I'm 411 Ashland Avenue. That's Chatterton, which is just south of the Lake and Lathrop site development, and that's what I want to speak to. It's not on the agenda for tonight. And in my recollection was that now was when the board was going to decide to give up the clawback clause. And so I'm really puzzled about why it's not on the agenda tonight. Last month, it also wasn't on the agenda at the end of the month. And yet they were there. Whoever was there, and they spoke during the public comments, which seems out of order. I don't know why that happened. And I want to say that if it's not on the agenda, then residents don't know that it's going to come up as a topic. So I'm not sure why that happened. But I'm going to speak to it because they should be on the agenda tonight. and I'd like to know why not, why they're not. I'm assuming I'm right about the clawback clause up now that you are, I mean, it's not on the agenda, so I don't know how this is going to happen. And I guess I'm asking you how this is going to work. And once that is gone, then the village is totally committed to this. I want you to know that Alpha Construction has sent us now two letters, one in November to say that the construction was starting, and one this past Wednesday. I want to tell you about the one in November. It had the name of Ed, I don't remember his last name, on the letter to call if you have questions. So of course I called him to find out about the piles of stones that were on the lot that I could see. And he said something to the effect of, why are you calling me? I don't know. I'm not the one to call. You should be calling Kyle. So this is just a, seems like, and I actually met Ed today. Nice guy. And so is Kyle. But he said, I didn't realize I was a point man. So we're not getting great communication here from this construction group and developer. About this meeting today, we got a letter on Wednesday saying there would be meetings today. The 407 side of our building said 8 o'clock in the morning. 8 o'clock in the morning. The 411 side, which I live at, said 9:30 in the morning. And I asked today, and they were having meetings with the other condos that are around here too. It would have been so much more neighbor friendly to say, we are having meetings across the day, one at 8, one at 9:30, one at 11, one at 1. It would have been nice if they'd done this last week so they could do one in the evening so that people could come, because we all have different schedules. And since they were having more meetings, they really could have done that. So again, this is another example of the not the best neighbor friendly style. I think the only other thing I have to say is, walking over at 8 o'clock in the morning, the snow had not been shoveled along Lathrop. By the 9:30 meeting, it was shoveled. A little path was shoveled. So again, this is part of what we have noticed all along, that only if neighbors complain or the board tells them to do something to clean up a site or take care of it, it doesn't seem to be done on their own. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. So Phyllis, let me just address two things. One, they're not on the agenda because they need to be on the agenda this evening. As far as where they need to be on from the 23rd, they've met all their obligations. However, with the clawback, we are going to address that in executive session, and so and talk about it in executive session. So we'll provide update to the public once we have discussed that in executive session. And the other thing that I'd suggest, and we all certainly love to hear all the details of the development because it's important for us to hear that, but I recommend, and I'm going to ask Brian, who is our point person? Is it Lisa? Is it John? Who is our point person so that Phyllis knows exactly who to call?
Absolutely. Right now, my recommendation is would be Lisa.
Lisa Shiner.
Yeah.
So Phyllis, if you have any questions about timing of the developer or the shoveling of the snow, you're more than welcome to always address us. But I think going to Lisa directly will probably give you much more, probably you'd be happier because you'll get immediate results. Not that we wouldn't be interested, it's just that we meet every two weeks. So that's that. So. Thank you,
okay,
Phyllis.
My point, thank you. My point, though, is that they send out a letter to the resident saying call, and then you call, yep. And they don't.
Understood.
You know, they
so I'm asking Lisa to look into that for you because you're right. You know, there should be a point person on their side to pick up the phone. So we're going to get that done. But, again, instead of waiting for a board meeting, call Lisa Shiner. All right. I think that ends our public comment. So
well,
I'm going.
Are you going to respond to me too, or just Phyllis?
Mindy, I don't know what to respond. You know, we have a partnership with Dominican University, and we've spent enormous amount of time and energy over the last year and a half developing that relationship and committing ourselves to the Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation framework. And so, I don't see us coming off that framework. Nor would I ever recommend it. So I don't know what else more to tell you, other than, you know, we are very sensitive to this issue across the board. And, you know, if we could do better in how we address it, we'll certainly look at it.
So you think River Forest is systemically racist?
I did say that. So I'm not looking to debate this at right now. I mean, I'd be happy to, you know, meet with you at another time. All right, so let's move on to our elected officials comment. So, Bob?
Thank you. Couple of things. I had an opportunity to attend with other fellow trustees the Housing Forward King Day activity. It was a lot of fun. And other than that, I don't have anything else.
Great, thanks. Ken?
I also want to thank the board and all the things you've done and continue to do and in honor of Martin Luther King. I had the pleasure of where I work with a nonprofit that helps minority youth get into college, and so I spent my time with them for the day. But I did hear about everything that's going on and what a lot of the trustees did, and I just want to say it was very appreciative, and that's all.
Great, thanks, Ken. I wanted to first congratulate the DEI committee for being named the person of the year or entity of the year by Wednesday Journal. It was just thrilling to see that. So that was huge, and I was really happy about that. Also, I last week attended the TRHT, Truth and Racial Healing Transformation meeting, sponsored by Dominican. We had a good group of maybe 20, 25 people from all across the community, a lot from Dominican, but a lot from various faith organizations and such. And much of the meeting was about preparation for the National Day of Racial Healing that Dominican sponsored, which I also attended some of the programs. One of them was a program called Seeing Whiteness that I found to be very helpful and very enlightening. Then I also did attend the day of service that Trustee Isaiah Brandon from Maywood put together, and he did a great job of bringing in elected officials and representatives from various nonprofits from a myriad of communities. Were there about five communities represented? We put together packs for Housing Forward to be able to give out to people in need, including snacks and water and masks and supportive notes. So that was a really nice event, and I really was impressed at how Isaiah put that together at the last minute, and it really worked. And actually, the final thing I wanted to say is that the plastic bag store is in. It is installed downtown in the Wrigley Building. It's only here for 10 days, which means that it's closing January 30th. I've been there. It's exciting and impressive and will leave an impression on you, and I highly recommend that you make it. It's free. If you just go in the plastic bag store, you pay a ticket to actually see the film portion of it, which they show several times a day. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Rez?
Okay, thank you. Good evening, everyone. I also want to join in congratulating Erica Bachner, Ken Johnson, and the 43 members of our DEI committee for the Wednesday Journal's River Forest Villages of the Year. I believe it's probably the first time that the journal had awarded such an honor to a big group of individuals. So kudos to all of you for reaching that, attaining that, and for all the work you do on behalf of the village. The other item I wanted to mention is that the Age Friendly Committee met on January the 12th. I'm happy to say that we pretty much are done with the collection of our surveys from our Age Friendly survey that went out. We received 146 hard copies of the survey responses. An additional 42 were submitted electronically. So what we're going to do is the committee now is going to take the hard copies and enter them into the electronic version of the SurveyMonkey that we sent out, so that we can have all of the information collected electronically, so that when we analyze it, we'll be able to do a better job of coming to some review and conclusions of the data that were submitted. So I do, again, want to thank our village staff, Elijah Babora, most currently, but also kudos to Sarah Pfeiffer, who was pretty much at the helm of the beginning of this survey. She's back there somewhere. Oh, no, she already, okay, never mind. Well, still kudos to her for for helping on this. So we look forward to working and pushing forward on this. So thank you.
Hello. Yes, congratulations to the DE&I team for being on the front page. That is an awesome thing for this village. Two, I was with Bob and Erica and Katie in Maywood making snack packs. I'm still worried about those chips because I think they got crushed by the water, but it's okay.
But they did make it to the packs because they were in my house all weekend.
That's true. And then last but not least, I just want to thank our new fire chief who's working with our new village administrator and their respective teams. So this is a shout out to everybody on working to devise a plan to dispose of old smoke detectors with that plan aligned with the goals of the River Forest Sustainability Commission. I also totally appreciate continuing to look for electronic vehicles and having that plan as part of the comprehensive plan. I appreciate your efforts. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement this evening. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. And we will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. So I wanted to make sure that everyone is aware. I think there was a email that was sent around by the village about COVID tests and being able to get those from the government. You can go to covidtests.gov. I went there. You can, I believe, get up to 4 tests. It is free. And so I encourage everyone to participate in that. I also just want to commend the time and energy of everyone who has had a hand in putting together the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Advisory Group for the village. It takes a lot of people and thoughts and ideas. It takes a lot of challenging the systems to come up with where and how we can do better. We are off to a amazing start. We did have a meeting last week. I wasn't able to attend because I had a conflict, but I heard that it went very well and pushed the our agenda forward. And I do want to just quickly address one of the public comments tonight and our partnership with Dominican and the work of people in DEI and those who are interrogating whiteness. I do think it's important to look at whiteness when we're talking about how are the ways that we can make systems more equitable. When people think who are white and you talk about race, you hear someone say, I have never thought of my race before. I've never needed to think of something. And you will hear from many people of color and Indigenous folks and Black people that they think about their ethnicity, and they have to think about their ethnicity every single day, 24 hours a day. And it impacts their life in knowable and unknowable ways. And that's what the work of the DEI Advisory Group is doing, is trying to parse out where can we break the barriers for people who are Black, who are Indigenous, people who are of color, and of other marginalized groups. for them in this community. And so I think it's very important that we do that work. And I commend Dominican for being the leader in that, and other people in the community who are doing that work as well. And you can't have one without the other. So that's all I'll say.
Okay. Ken, you want to follow up?
Yeah, I forgot. I was also going to do the just about the DEI committee, where what's been going on. I wanted to add that, so with our last meeting, we further developed our strategy to proceed. And I think it was reported that we were, you know, maybe only focusing or done a deep dive into the RFP. Well, the RFP is one of the 8 initiatives that we're working on right now. And so I'll give you the 8. So one is obviously the RFP, and all these are in their beginning phases. The second one is employment and HR. The third one is purchasing and suppliers. The fourth one is housing. The fifth one is community outreach. The sixth one is intergovernmental relationships. Did I say 8? I meant to say 7. 7, and the seventh one being governance, DEI review, and framework. And we have definitions among all of them, and we're working to develop further, you know, what we mean by it, so that we can also give out a clear story as to what the DEI impact is. And we also acknowledge that upon receiving the Villager of the Year, we as a group feel it's something that gives us more of a challenge to the future, because we know we have work to do and we want to live up to that Villager of the Year, so we're excited about it.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thank you. And congratulations, being named Villager of the Year. It's a 45 appointed 45. Advisory group, so it's a very large group, but I think it's a good working group, and so I congratulate both of you as chairs, and of course Brian and Lisa as a co-chair. So it's good stuff, and we're excited about what will come from all of this, so thank you so much. Also, welcome Tom. We officially see him versus Zoom. Welcome. We're glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
Okay, good. And that's pretty much what all I have, just because the night's getting long. But Julie, I don't know if you could. I knew you wanted to speak public comment, and I did not see the chat. So my apologies, Julie. If you're available and you can hear me, I will allow you to give a public comment. If you can't, then we'll move on. I just didn't. I don't have Zoom up. Does she? I don't know, Julie, if you're on, you can unmute if you want to speak. So, oh, there she is.
Yes, I needed to unmute.
No worries, Julie. Speak. Sorry, I didn't see the chat. I'm not up on Zoom, so my apologies.
Listen, this is all new to me. well, I'm Julie Patterson, 7575 Lake Street, River Forest. I'm really sorry to hear about Phyllis's rather negative experience with Ed. We have had very positive interactions with Ed. I also can explain why they set up the meetings the way they did. I was concerned that they had invited everybody for the same time, so I walked next door to the office to scope the situation out. I had a very pleasant conversation with their sales associate, Jenna, I can't remember her last name. They did that specifically because they didn't want too many people in the same place at the same time. I do, however, agree that 8 o'clock is awfully early in the morning. Glad ours wasn't then. I also, and I knew this before, that part of the reason that the area in front of the sales office is not shoveled is because they are tenants, and it is up to the landlord to arrange for shoveling. At the meeting, we really appreciated at Centennial House the direct communication from Alpha to the neighbors and the invitation to the meeting. He was very positive and worked very hard. The first day that soil was being removed at 6 in the morning, the dump trucks were lined up between Centennial House and Windsor House to the south of us. And their board president contacted me and also contacted Ed. Ed was extremely responsive. He came over here and he spoke to the dump truck people in person, and he actually at one point ended up directing traffic and had a taste of River Forest traffic at this area. And so these have been very positive interactions. I thought he did a good job today. I'm glad to know that who the young fellow was, Kyle. And that's about all I have to say for right now. But Phyllis, at some time I'd like to contact you directly. I've been wanting to walk over and leave you a note, but haven't gotten there yet. So if through Lisa or through Shelby, if you want to contact me, please feel free to do. So I'd like to.
Thank you, Julie. And that's a great idea. Maybe both of you guys can speak. Again, remember Lisa Shiner. She will answer all your questions probably in a faster than coming to the board meeting. All right. So I think that concludes our elected officials and our public comments. John? Nothing. John, if you don't sit here, I don't know that you exist, actually.
You do have a history of this.
I do have a history. Yeah. Even if you're sitting here, I have a history.
Kathy, can I ask a follow-up on Phyllis's question about whether Lake and Lathrop, when they come to give us the updates, if that should be a line item on our agenda?
Yeah, I think typically they have been. Right now, I think, and Greg, you helped me out. I think within the contract they had to come once a month. That was their contractual obligation, right?
Yeah, upon a reasonable request.
So somehow it got like they have to come every board meeting, and that wasn't the case. So what happened is because you and others were asking for it, we would just said, hey, come on and give us an update in general public comment. That's how they got to general public comment versus on the board.
Are we going to keep it like that, or can we put it as a line item?
I'll ask the village attorney to weigh in.
So if the village would like them to, board would like them to continue to come, you can request that, and they should come when you request, basically. So if it's a monthly or bi-monthly update once they begin construction, that would be appropriate. It's a reasonable request. You can't demand that they be here at Village Hall every day, updating you constantly. As construction hopefully begins, they probably don't have to provide as many updates as they did in getting up to that point, would be my guess.
Yeah, and I would just think, and I think you would agree, I mean, if we start the precedent, I mean, we just don't want to treat them differently than we would treat any other developer, I don't think. Because once, the project is handed over to them, I mean, we're out of, other than the fact that they have planned development in place, like any developer would have a planned development in place.
Yeah, I guess I was speaking to... I heard Phyllis's concern that they don't know if Lake and Lathrop are going to be at our meeting and speak unless it's on the agenda, and if it's, they wouldn't have expected them to be in the resident public comment. So
again,
that landed on me.
Understood. I think that if the project pivots into construction, it'll mostly be staff talking with them, talking with neighbors. And I would expect there would be less a need for the board to be involved in those conversations. It's more of a staff issue at that point.
And then if staff is reporting on it, will it be a line item so that residents know it's going to be discussed at our meeting?
Yeah, that's up to the village administrator and village president
agenda. We could talk about it. Again, I don't want to treat one developer different than another developer, but we'll talk through the plan development updates.
I think the community is so interested in Lake and Lathrop. I can only see it as a benefit so that when stuff is happening, they can say, look, we're doing this, and at least on a monthly basis, we have it on there so we can provide.
We could do that, or we could put updates. It in the newsletter. We could put everything going to get updated in the website, I mean, real time, so people don't have to come to our board meeting. They can read it on. We have all sorts of discussions around it.
I love those ideas, too. Yeah. I think having it once a month, to your point, once a month on our agenda would be great. And whether it's Cedric or somebody else talking about it to give us an update.
I mean, we can make that decision as a board. Okay, and we'll put that on the agenda, in the future agenda, talk through what we would expect the developer to do, and all developers for that matter, if that's the case. Okay, fair enough. All right, so I think that ends our citizen, our elected official comments and announcements. So we'll move on to the consent agenda. And we have item A through F. If I can get a approval for item A through F.
Make a motion to approve consent agenda items A through F.
Okay, any comments or questions regarding any of these items? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read it and then take the vote.
Consent agenda A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, January 10th, 2022. B, approval of an agreement with Koenig, Lindgren, O'Hara, Abuna, Inc. to complete a traffic study in the northeast corner of River Forest for not to exceed cost of $16,500 and authorize the village administrator to execute the contract agreement. C, approval of payment to Kleinthorpe and Jenkins Limited for legal services in the amount of $31,603.91. D, authorize the village administrator to enter into an agreement to retain the financial advisory services of Kane McKenna Capital Inc. as proposed for an amount not to exceed $25,000 plus incidental costs. E, financial report December 2021. F, village administrator's report. Trustee Johnson? Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bochner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Okay. All right, moving on to item 7, recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. Let's get a motion, and then we will talk through these issues. So if I can get a motion for 7A. Let's do first the stop sign.
Motion to install stop signs in the north-south direction of Ashland Avenue at its intersection with Vine Street.
Okay. Second.
Okay, let's just take that, Jeff.
Sure. So pretty self-explanatory. The Traffic Safety Commission met on January 19th, and one of the items that they discussed was a request by Dave Carroll, who is one of our Traffic and Safety Commissioners, to convert the current two-way stop intersection of Vine and Ashland to a four-way stop. Currently, Vine Street stops at Ashland, but Ashland traffic north-south is allowed to flow through the intersection. So the concerns that were discussed mostly had to do with traffic volumes and speeds northbound coming off of Madison Street and running through that intersection. So through public comment and review of the consultant's analysis, the commission essentially voted to recommend approval of converting that to a four-way, a full stop intersection. So that's what's before you here this evening.
Any questions for Jeff? I mean, this seems to be a no-brainer. Any questions? Okay. I would ask the clerk to take the vote, please. No, it's not the banner. It's on. Here. It's on. It's on.
Yeah, we just heard it.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Bochner?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, let's go to. Okay, pardon me. It passed, right? Zero.
Okay. Did pass.
We'll go ahead and get a motion to item 2 on this. It's seeking the board to get a consensus to remand the recommendation for a flashing stop sign. So I'm going to ask for a motion and then a second on that item, and we can discuss it.
I'd like to make a motion to seek board consensus to remand the recommendations for flashing stop signs at Washington and Keystone back to the Traffic and Safety Commission. Just that first one?
Yeah, just the first one. Thanks.
Second.
Okay. So, Jeff, if you want to explain.
Sure. So at that same traffic and safety meeting, Ryan Blecker of Warrant 147 Keystone Avenue came in to request curb bump outs at the intersection of Keystone and Washington. Curb bump outs being kind of at the corners is what you see on Chicago Avenue at some intersections, Lake Street. We've got some down in Madison as well. The concern was Keystone and Washington is a four-way stop already. The concern was that there are a lot of vehicles, anecdotally, that disregard the stop signs. We've got similar issue to what we discussed a couple of months ago on Chicago at William, where there's a parking lane that some folks tend to use as a kind of passing lane, if you will. So you have more vehicles entering the intersection than should be there. So the initial request, again, was for curb bump outs to help stem some of those issues. Due to the high cost of bump outs and the need for further kind of analysis and potential incorporation into a larger project, the idea was to continue to pursue that. And we will be going back to the Traffic and Safety Commission with some additional kind of temporary bump out ideas, if you will. But in the meantime, what can be done to help make that intersection a little bit safer? So one of the ideas that was discussed was to install a flashing stop sign in the east-west direction on Washington Street at Keystone Avenue. That wasn't the original request. That was just one of the things that was discussed and then ultimately voted voted for, and it ultimately recommended to be approved. Subsequent to that discussion, Mr. Blecker and one of the commissioners have contacted staff indicating that they had a misunderstanding of where that flashing stop sign was to go and are not in favor of putting it at Keystone and Washington. So essentially we're just looking to bring that back to traffic and safety for further discussion, make sure everybody's on the same page.
Long story short, he doesn't want it, so we want to look at something different. All right, very good. All right, let's take the vote.
What was the reason why he didn't want it? Just
wasn't part of the initial request and didn't prefer not to have flashing signs out his window.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, please, John.
Any questions?
No, go ahead.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Okay. And then the third item on this is, can I get a motion and a second for the third item? Seeking consensus to install.
Motion to seek board consensus to install a flashing crosswalk sign at Washington Boulevard and Forest.
Are you here second?
Second.
Okay. Jeff?
So essentially, again, not necessarily part of the initial request, but due to the fact that we're talking about this intersection and the two adjacent parks to this intersection of Forest and Washington, the idea of putting the flashing crosswalk signage at that location came up and was voted for approval. Basically, we're looking at what we have at Lake Street and Forest, the flashing stop sign where a pedestrian can hit it. It flashes brightly until they're through to notify drivers. So that is this item.
Okay. Any questions on this motion? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Okay, before we move on to the next item, I did want to say this earlier in the consent agenda, but I know Gary Williams, who is on the phone here, sent us a long letter indicating some of the things that he'd like us to look at on the traffic study. And I was remiss of saying anything, but I'd like us to make sure that we, you know, consider all of what Gary said in his email. So just to be on the record on that.
Certainly. And it's definitely on staff's radar and something we will address. One of the discussions that we recently had coming out of some of this, and I'm sure you'll recall, this is the second time we brought this forward for approval, this study. The first time we brought it forward for approval, and there were some additional comments and questions and concerns that a different resident had asked us to incorporate. So that's why we're bringing it back for approval. And now we've got some additional ones. So in light of kind of alternative viewpoints on this from residents and in light of some of the requests that we've had at the Traffic and Safety Commission. One of the things that staff is looking for some direction from the board on is, you know, we'd like to move forward with this contract as it is, but also potentially do a more comprehensive village-wide study to in part incorporate Mr. Williams' comments, but also address anything else that we have going on in town. Vine and Ashland issue that we just discussed a little bit earlier, that has to do with traffic coming off of Madison Street. We had a similar issue at the last meeting. So some of these things are a bit repetitive. So staff is kind of, again, looking for some direction as to whether or not this board would be in favor of pursuing some sort of more comprehensive, you know, village-wide study.
Yeah. So Jeff, yeah. So we've approved the study, which is good.
Yep.
And I think we all agree, unless I hear differently mm-hmm. around the table here, that we should have a wider, more comprehensive study. Right. So, you know, Brian, if you can, with Jeff, bring back, what you think that proposal ought to look like so we can have a discussion, that would be good.
And on this one, the issue that you're gonna have, Jeff, is he's got a not to exceed number on here. So any changes he makes on that, he may have to come back with another budget on it. So do we want to give him any leeway on the 16.5 or?
Well, I don't think you're going to change this study, are you?
The idea would be at this point, Trustee O'Connell, to proceed with this study as currently laid out. And then if we do a more comprehensive village-wide study, we would still take the findings from this report and incorporate it. So that's when we would also incorporate any additional requests that come in.
So great. Okay, so I just have one other thing. So 2 years ago, Lisa helped me out here. 2 years ago, we had issues with parking on various streets as it related to the CK. Was there a study that we did as part of that could be incorporated into this? Or are we starting at square one?
Are we talking the comprehensive, the commuter parking study?
Yeah.
Certainly. Anything we have from that, anything we have from the Safe Walking Routes to School study, any more comprehensive, both of which were done by KLOA as well. Any of that stuff, we would certainly work into the village-wide traffic study to help inform us.
Okay, great. So just so to, I guess, conclude it, so from Gary's standpoint, who's on the phone, a lot of his questions and issues could and will be addressed through more of a comprehensive look, which we're going to look at this corridor as well.
Certainly. There are also other folks who are waiting for this to take place too, so we don't want to hold off too much either. So we'll try to kind of get both of those taken care of at some point here.
All right, so bring it back.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy and Jeff. Appreciate your consideration. And if KLOA had any comments or questions on my comments, I'd be just happy to talk with them.
Yeah, sure, Gary. And we'll connect, Jeff. So, if you can work that together, that would be great.
Certainly.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
Yes. All right. So let's move on to 7B. If I can get a motion to approve 7B.
Motion to approve an ordinance granting the requested variance to section 10.11.8 of the zoning ordinance at 1111 Bonnie Bray Place.
Second.
Okay. All right, so Lisa, do you want us to say a little something and then we can call on?
Sure. The property owner was called out for business reasons the last minute, so he is on Zoom with us and will be joining us momentarily. The Zoning Board of Appeals held a public hearing in November regarding the requested variation. The purpose of the variation is to provide relief from the requirements that the property owner provide covered parking for 75% of all of the off-street parking spaces. Currently, this is a 6-unit apartment building, and Mr. Kamra bought it and is renovating the building. He has 4 parking spaces in the rear of the property that are in an enclosed garage. He would like to remove the garage and install a parking pad that would accommodate 7 vehicles. So he is still not compliant with the zoning requirement that there be 15.5 spots on the site, and that a little better than 11.5 of them be covered. However, he would be increasing the overall parking on the site. So he's not worsening the existing parking nonconformity, but he does need a variation for the covered parking requirement. So the sole issue before the board is whether or not to concur with the zoning board's recommendation that he be granted a variation for the covered parking. There are two issues in the findings of fact that I have asked the property owner to address before the board tonight. One is with regard to the permeable paver solution that was included as a condition of approval, and the other is the affordable housing component of this. The first thing I would just like to mention is that I've talked to the village's engineer, and the property is subject to the village's stormwater regulations. He has not gone through the permitting process yet, and so which typically you would not do unless you get your zoning variation. So we haven't identified how much stormwater detention is required on site, nor has the best solution to provide that detention been identified. Permeable pavers may be the ideal solution, but we don't know that yet. So I think the ZBA's intention was to have an offsetting benefit if we're creating more impervious surface, which we support and obviously require as part of our stormwater management ordinance. So my suggestion would be that the board condition the approval upon compliance with the village's stormwater ordinance in lieu of presupposing what the solution should be. The other issue is with regard to affordable housing. So the Zoning Board of Appeals had requested that the owner consider making some of the units affordable, which he committed to doing. I would note that the village's attorney at the zoning hearing noted that we cannot condition the approval on affordable housing, but the property owner did commit to provide it. He has since examined some of that and will speak to that issue for you tonight. So, Mr. Kamra, are you on the line? Can you unmute yourself and address the board?
Yeah, good evening, everyone. This is Shantanu Kamra. I am the property owner for 1111 Bani Bray. First of all, I want to thank the zoning board for giving me this conditional approval. The property on 1111 Bani Bray has currently four enclosed parking spaces, which has been the case for the last, I think, 80, 90 years. I bought the building in September 2021, and I requested a variance for a couple of issues with the zoning board. One was the open parking spaces, and second was the off-street parking. The current proposed zoning variation is to demolish the existing frame car garage on the east side of lot 14, which is 1111 Bani Bray, and replace it with an open parking pad for six cars. One of the parking spaces would be ADA compliant, which was one of the, I think, conditions part of the zoning approval. And the second condition pertained to the affordable housing units, which you know, I'm more than happy to commit. But given the taxes on this building is almost 35,000, it doesn't make economical sense to have two of these six apartments as affordable housing. What I do, support is affordable housing if the village allows to, you know, give me two units in the basement. I'm more than happy to provide more affordable housing in the community.
If I could just address one issue there. So in the follow-up conversations with the property owner after the zoning hearing, he indicated to staff that he was interested in exploring converting a portion of the building into additional residential units that he would utilize for affordable housing purposes. And we certainly are supportive of that. That does trigger a separate process that is under the plan development ordinance and is not something that's under the purview of the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, that's a completely separate DRB process to add affordable housing units in the basement, similar to the ADO ordinance that the city of Chicago has for some pilot zones. So yeah, I'm more than happy to provide more affordable housing.
As a point of clarification, it's adding any multifamily units, not adding affordable housing units.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to ask now if any of the trustees have questions for you or for Lisa regarding the...
So just to clarify my own mind, has this evolved from the property owner offering to create affordable housing units within the existing livable space right now to now saying, no, not in the existing livable space, but if you let me create two more garden apartments, then I'll make those affordable housing?
Yes.
Okay. And also, is it a pad for 6 cars or 7 cars?
Let me pull.
So it was originally the plan that was submitted to the zoning board was for 7 cars. But I think one of the recommendations that came out of the November 11th meeting was to have at least one. I went back to the architect, and based on the ADA compliance regulations, it can only accommodate 6 parkings.
So adding 2 garden apartments then changes the calculation on the parking to take it from what to what?
So at the end of the day, the garden apartments is subject to plan development. Yep. It would potentially increase the required parking on the site, and that would all have to be vetted by the DRB as part of a plan development application. So that's not what's before the board tonight.
So it sounds like we're dealing with 2 issues. And the question is, can we really address the first issue without talking about the second? Because if we give them the go-ahead now, he's just going to turn around. He's got to go back to DRB, correct, on the garden apartments, and we have a whole other situation. So I don't even know why this is on the agenda then.
Well, because he wants to put parking in.
Well, but he
wants to take down the garage.
Right. I understand that part, but as part of his negotiation, what he's saying is he'll abide by the affordable housing if he can do the garden apartments, and if he does that, then we have another parking situation to deal with. So I'm not comfortable voting for one until we completely understand, you know, what it is what we're going to do.
Right. Because the other thing I heard was we can't condition the affordable housing commitment. My other question was, so is this resident or owner complying or offering to do it anyway? And that, so we're not forcing him as the condition, but he's offering that as the condition of approval, correct?
Right. So at the Zoning Board of Appeals meeting, it was explained by my colleague, Carmen Forte, who's also, you know, assistant village attorney, that the village cannot condition a parking variation on compliance with affordable housing standards. Parking and housing in this instance bear no relationship to each other. Nonetheless, the ZBA pushed the applicant, who agreed to amend his application, to say that I will include 2 units of affordable housing in my building. He did this on the fly. At the meeting, it made its way into the conditions of recommended approval. Since then, the applicant has said, that doesn't pencil out for my finances. He told you that tonight. And so I think the question before the board is, do you believe he's made the case for a variation where he has 3 on-site parking spaces in a garage that he wants to take down and expand to 6 parking spaces, one of which is an ADA space? That's what I'm hearing tonight. The issue of affordable housing is only relevant if he comes back and asks to expand into the basement with additional dwellings, and then you must decide. Does it make sense to allow these extra dwellings to come in without an increase in parking because he's fully parked up if you allow this variation to go forward, right? Or he may not come back with that. So I think you only need to focus tonight on the parking question and remove the affordable housing component from the discussion.
Okay, so that's what I want. You just clarified it. Exactly what I thought is that there's really the affordable housing or the unit is really not an issue right now.
Correct.
It's just the parking.
It's similar to the 400 Ashland plan development
I'm just saying.
Amendment that came in where the property owner was asked and agreed to include an affordable unit.
Right.
You can always ask, but in this case, it's not relevant to the parking variation, so it shouldn't be a necessary component of the approval.
And of the parking issues, we're just addressing the garage coming down and replacing 3 covered with 6 or 7. It's still not clear to me. 6 or 7 open parking spots on a pad. We're not addressing the off-site, the off-street parking issue, which is being handled in the future.
Correct. So the site plan that was submitted to the ZBA shows 6 spots plus a compact space. but in order to meet the ADA requirements, he's removing one of those spaces so that there's sufficient room next to a vehicle to allow access for people who have mobility issues.
So Lisa, okay. Is it 6 or 7?
Six.
It's 6. One of them being ADA correct. Compliant. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so that's...
Actually, I have one question, sorry.
Yeah.
Do we know if when they... Because I actually have... When they're taking down the building and they're putting a parking pad, is that going to be bigger? Are we losing, like, permeable space by doing this?
Yes, but that's where the stormwater management requirements are triggered, that there needs to be an offsetting factor of detention for the new impervious surface.
Are we losing any trees?
No. Not that I know of. Let's ask the property owner to address.
No, the part of the garage and the backyard doesn't have any trees. So we are not losing any trees in the community.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. All right. And we have a recommendation to... What is the recommendation from the commission?
Sure. So the recommendation is to grant the variation requested. My suggestion is only to put a fine point on condition number two that addresses the fact that it must be constructed from concrete and permeable materials. I think it presupposes a solution, and we just want to go through the process with the property owner through permitting to identify the appropriate stormwater solution. But the point being, he's subject to those requirements even without this condition. So we can leave it in there. I'm just concerned it muddies the water a little bit because I don't want it to be confusing that this is the only solution we will accept if, in fact, there's a better or more economical solution that can be achieved through the permitting process. So I would just make it... would just revise the condition that he comply with the village's stormwater ordinance.
Okay. And
then delete. So the condition number two would be modified and condition number four would be deleted as noted in the findings of fact in your packet.
Okay.
And
we'll change our motion
now,
then.
Is the ordinance reflective of what you're adding in, Lisa, or no?
You'd
it needs to be
modify.
Amended.
Is who what, moved or, it and seconded?
Okay.
Did you move it?
Yeah.
No, Lisa moved... Right, and I second.
So I think what Lisa Scheiner is saying is to modify the ordinance
correct.
To say what you just said, take out four.
I have a question. Chief,
okay.
So you're not modifying?
How's the parking situation up there at night? Is it bad?
No.
Okay. I mean, this is a pretty big variance. I mean, you know, it's over 50%.
What?
So, pardon me?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It's a good variance.
This is a big variance. This is over 50%. So we have to think about parking. So we have to think about this and things that we're going to do in the future because we're going to set some precedent here. So
can you tell me what you mean by 50%? Because he's increasing the parking, not getting it where it needs to be, but he's at least increasing it.
That's exactly the point. He needs to be at 15.5 and he's at 7.5. He's taking it to 7.5. So he's making it better, but he's still getting a variance for over 50% of what he's required to have.
But it's already that way. How can it be a variance for something that already exists?
Because he's coming in and he's changing the use. So he's got to come to us to make the change in it. So when he does that, he opens the book and the book says what you need is 15.5. And so he's going to provide 7. So we're giving a variance for
I
that.
Don't think that's what we're voting on tonight.
We are.
That's exactly what we're voting on. And Bob's got it.
I thought we were going from enclosed to
But I think what you miss, Katie, and it's easy to miss. So he's saying that he's already non-compliant for parking.
Right.
Woefully non-compliant. So by having just 3 covered parking spots. So now that he's asking for a variance because he's changing the use, if anybody was to build that building right now, they need 15. And he's saying, well, I'm going from 3 to 7.
Six,
whatever it is.
Yeah.
With one being ADA compliant.
Right. But I thought that he still is going to be required to make up the difference with off-street parking, but we're not addressing that yet.
No. There's no off-street parking.
There's no, no off-street. We don't have an off-street parking ordinance.
No, he's not required to go out and find the spaces that are needed to meet the 15.5 space requirement.
Which is what we did to the guy at 400 Ashland. We made him go out and get
But that's a
planned else.
Development process. Right. This is strictly a relief from the covered parking requirement. Mm-hmm. He's improving the amount of nonconformity that's there, meaning he's increasing the number of spaces, but logistically it is impossible on that property to meet the 15.5 space parking requirement. And he isn't required, even under our zoning ordinance, to go out and find an additional 9.5 spaces to meet that 15.5 space requirement. What he's asking to do is demolish the garage, put in a parking pad, and increase the number of spaces on site.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Which.
And at the same time, make sure that it's compliant with the storm water.
Correct.
I hear you, Bob, but I mean, I think this is an unusual circumstance.
I'm just saying.
Can I just actually one other thing is, like, I know that you said like we want to take out the permeable pavers, but there is something about aesthetics, and like I don't want something necessarily that's cheaper and just not, you know, in keeping with the, I know it's on an alley, but still.
Are you saying that's what are you saying, Lisa?
Lisa said better or cheaper. I would just say
no, and more economical.
But again, like I think we might want to have a like. I just want to make sure because I would prefer permeable pavers in a heartbeat because I think that they do the job and they are also more aesthetically pleasing and they'll align with the alley and all that stuff.
You get it? I mean,
well, I think the property is on the property owner being on the phone. Here's your preference. I think staff hears your preference. And when it comes through for permitting, we can look at that and push towards that direction, assuming, of course, it provides the necessary detention and meets our stormwater ordinance, which I would imagine it does. But I'm not the engineer. We'll let them take a look at it.
But you can also require it.
I have another question. So where's the petitioner going to put their trash?
So it would be at the same place where we have the garbage container today, which is south of the electric pole. So the garbage container and the two recyclable cans. This parking lot actually helps to, you know, get access to the garbage container.
Okay, so where are the other cars? Where are they gonna go? I mean, or you're just assuming that the renters or owner are not going to need or won't have cars? I
mean, in the current parking layout that I submitted, which we have 6 parking spaces with 1 space bigger and being ADA compliant, each dwelling unit or each apartment comes up, you know, it comes with 1 parking space, which is an open parking space. And currently, it's only 3 enclosed parking spaces.
Yeah.
So with this variance, I mean, I certainly don't meet the 15.5, but this is a non-conforming building.
I guess it's the way you look at it. He's doubling it.
yeah. But I think in my humble opinion that 15.5 is for any new construction multifamily dwelling. And at this point, you know, I'm not building a new 6-flat apartment building.
So we're getting this request because the petitioner came to us asking, can I demolish this garage?
You
got it.
We wouldn't be seeing this
That's
otherwise.
Correct.
If everything were status quo, there would only be 4 garage spaces for this.
That's correct.
Can I just ask a quick question with regard to the ADA compliant space?
Sure.
Could you just elaborate what that actually, I understand it's more space, but is that also, you know, for only disabled individuals or is that just an open space or how does that get defined or used by the residents?
So the open parking space as it relates to ADA compliance has a bigger width, mm-hmm. and it has to be the one that's most accessible. So this would be the parking space that's on the eastmost side, mm-hmm. on the south, which is the left part of the building. So that someone who has, who's disabled, mm-hmm. he gets that parking spot that is, you know, most accessible and has a bigger width than the other parking spaces.
So is each parking space assigned, sorry, Bob, is each parking space assigned to a unit right now? And that ADA space would be assigned or not assigned?
So currently there are no parking spaces. It's a covered parking garage. And once we transition to the open parking space, each dwelling unit would have one open parking space.
Just out of curiosity, how do you determine who gets the ADA space?
I
think that's what Ken said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you determine who receives the ADA space? Who is assigned that space?
So if one of the six tenants does have, you know, a disability, as per the Americans with Disabilities Act, and I'm a physical therapist by trade. So yeah, if someone has, you know, a physical impairment, then he gets to keep that parking space.
What if, can I ask this? What if all there's nobody who has a disability and then someone moves in, has it like a couple? And sure. There's a husband and wife, for example, and then the wife becomes disabled, but someone's already mm-hmm. using that other space. How are you going to, are you planning what do you, I guess, evict that person or what from the space?
No, not okay. So how I would, so this is, more from a property management perspective, and I appreciate the comment. What I typically do is that I would not assign a parking space to, so you have a, you know, valid point that, hey, today none of the six tenants have a disability. And what if, you know, somehow tomorrow, you know, one of the tenants gets disabled and he wants that ADA compliant parking space to be assigned to him because now he has a special condition. And, you know, so at that, I mean, I would keep the parking lot, you know, there is an addendum I add saying that, hey, in the future, if, you know, different, you know, residents in the building have, you know, a need for the ADA compliant parking space, then we would be flexible and committed to, you know, help the other residents in the building.
So, So Lisa, I assume this plan hasn't been vetted by anybody in engineering yet?
It has not come in for permits at this point.
Okay, because I think there's a couple of, so as the petitioner was talking, there's a couple issues. He suggested that the ADA spot was going to be on the southeast corner, which is actually the furthest one in the compact spot. I would think it'd probably be in the southwest. And given the fact that it's going to be ADA, it requires more space than what's provided here, which may knock out the compact spot.
That's what he's saying. Yeah, that's why it reduced from 7 to 6.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this.
Yeah, and as it relates to the southeast versus the southwest, parking space being ADA compliant. As per my architect, she said that it's the southeast that's the easiest parking space, and it's the most accessible for someone with disability. But I have no issues getting it vetted from the village engineer when it comes for permitting.
So there's a lot of kind of things that we're adding from a permit standpoint, but I think we should be cognizant of it. Like, I think to your point, we have to make sure that the spot's in the right spot, which
sure.
is going through permitting. We want to make sure it's not just economical for, you know, the petitioner, but it's pleasing.
Aesthetically,
enhances the, you know, so somehow we have to, I don't know, I think we should consider that.
And so this, you know, as part one of the recommendations, I think I didn't delve into earlier was, you know, I'm more than happy to build a fence to basically, you know, have privacy for the neighbors. And, you know, as it relates to the, you know, pavers, you know, I think that would fall in line with the alley pavers. And I mean, I think this would be a tremendous benefit to the, you know, residents on, you know, 1100 block of Bonnie Bray, because then I'm not dependent on off-street parking, which I think is not possible.
So I have a question about that off-street parking, that it's not possible, because I'm reading that Chairman Martin asked how the parking shortage was handled prior to the purchase of the building. And
correct.
I think you responded that the previous owner owned two adjoining lots to the south that were used for parking by the general public and by the residents of the property. So I was thinking that I was being asked to vote on demolishing the enclosed parking that would increase the available parking from either 3 or 4 to 6. But now I'm realizing that as it has stood prior to your purchase, the residents did have more parking available to them.
Right. Well, that's why I asked, where would these cars go? I mean, they can't go on the street, and a different owner owns that parking lot.
So,
and those parking lots are on the market,
right.
And I think there has been a lot of, for the last 5-6 years. I mean, the plan is to basically build some kind of townhome community or a big apartment building on those two parking lots.
Right. So the owner prior to you did offer more than just those covered spots in the garage. The owner prior to you was offering some open spots in the lot next door as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, because when I bought the building, there were only two tenants living in the building out of 6. And those two tenants were using the two car garage basically in the back. So I don't know when, at the point of, you know, having 100% occupancy, if he was offering, but I think his plan was to build townhomes in those two parking lots for the last 5-6 years.
Okay.
But at some point, I mean, this issue would have happened if you would have gone ahead with the development project. Then, you know, this question would have arose at that point.
All right. That didn't work. All right. So I think we all kind of understand where we're at. If we want to move forward and we want to put any, I guess the question I have for the parking is, if we want to put any, like, you need to do these things, make them permeable pavers, we can add that if we'd like, if that's what the will of the trustees.
Yes, that condition number 2 from the ZBA that's in the ordinance in front of you,
right,
is that the parking lot shall be constructed from concrete and permeable materials to match the adjacent alley to the east. If you want to offer some flexibility on that, you could say to the extent feasible under the village's stormwater management ordinance. If that's acceptable to the board, and then I recommend that you also remove condition number 4.
Condition.
Affordable housing condition.
All right.
Okay. So it would be the first 3 conditions subject to the amendment that's being proposed.
Correct.
Okay. And then, Lisa, you would have to agree to amend your motion to reflect that.
Yeah.
No, that's okay.
I just say you either
for
agree
the record,
or you don't agree.
Yeah, so... Since you made the motion.
Do you agree to amend your motion to...
To reflect what Greg, the attorney, just said.
Can I just add
yes.
that?
Yes.
Hi, I agree to amend my motion as defined by our village attorney.
Okay.
And I would agree, since I seconded, I would agree to the amendment.
All
Thank you. Now the amended ordinance is before the board, ready for a vote when it's
right.
time.
All right. Okay. Any further questions for Lisa Shiner or the owner? Okay. Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to take the vote.
Trustee O'Connell?
No.
Trustee Bochner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Okay. All right. It's approved. So good luck. And well, hopefully we'll see you back at our board table with the affordable housing garden apartments.
I completely appreciate it, and I look forward to doing a good job in the community.
Okay, very good. Well, good luck to you. All right.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so now we're moving on to 9A, new business. Okay. If I can get a motion in a second.
I move to approve an ordinance providing for the issue of not to exceed $550,000 general obligation limited tax bonds series 2022 of the Village of River Forest, Cook County, Illinois, for the purpose of paying for public infrastructure projects within the village, providing for the levy of a direct annual tax to pay the principal of and interest on said bonds.
Second.
Ozzie.
Hello, Maria. So we had a public hearing at the last meeting on January 10th to take any comments regarding this bond issuance. It is, we do this every other year. It's part of our village's debt service extension base. So this year we solicited bids to several local financial institutions, and we received several bids on January 20th. And again, we awarded Forest Park National Bank they came in with very good competitive interest rates again, 0.65% and 0.95% in the second year for the 2-year issuance. So today we will do a bond closing. We will sell the bonds on February 16th. So tonight we're recommending you approve the ordinance for the issuance of not to exceed the $550,000.
Okay, seems reasonable. Mm-hmm. Any questions for Rosie? Okay, hearing none. John, if I can ask you to take the vote.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Bochner?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Okay, passes. All right, very good. So that concludes our our open session. We need to go into executive session, so if I can
make a motion to enter an executive session under Illinois ILCS 120/2C5 to discuss the purchase of lease of real property for the use of the village, including whether a particular parcel should be acquired, C11, and litigation involving the village that is pending.
Second.
Okay. So,
President Ducey, are we going to go back into open session after executive session? So then we will mute the lines and empty the room here, but we'll leave the Zoom and the YouTube up so that we can rejoin it after executive session. I think that's our best option.
Yeah, I would go. I mean, just if anybody wants to rejoin us, put it up. I mean, they can come back to this line. But we don't know.
Is there any place you can put them in a separate room?
Yeah.
Like another Zoom? Put them in a waiting room?
Not at this point, no. But,
no.
No, we're not going to adjourn. Well,
there might be an action.
So they got to be able,
No.
Bob, they got to be able to come into open session.
I don't know how else we would notify them that we've restarted the meeting. That's what I'm thinking through. So I'm happy to do whatever you guys want me to do.
It's Julie Patterson.
Julie, if it's okay with you, we're going to close this out, and then Lisa will email you when we're going back into open session so you can join us back again.
Oh, she can hear you.
Yeah. I don't.
All right. All righty.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, sure. Julie. Maybe I think she
can. Okay.
Yeah. We'll shut it down.
We need the vote to go into the
thing. Oh, we didn't take that?
No.
I'm
correct.
Sorry, John. Thought we did.
Trustee Johnson. Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes, here.
Trustee Johnson.
Here.
I'm here. Did you call me, John?
President Adus.
I'm here.
Thank you. He's getting
back at you. I get back at you. Yeah. I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. All right. So just real quickly, from executive session, the action we took, or not the action, the consensus that we took was, let me read this. For the Lake and Lathrop development, the village board received a request from Lake and Lathrop Partners and Wintrust Bank for an extension of time so that Wintrust to close on their construction loan through February 4th. Developer has met all of its bona fide construction requirements prior to the January 23rd deadline. However, except that Wintrust could not finalize and close on the loan due to the Omicron and COVID delays. Therefore, the Village Board is willing to give Wintrust and the developer until February 4th the opportunity to close on the construction loan under the unique circumstances presented by the Omicron variant. If the February 4th at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time deadline is not met, the village administrator and the village attorney are authorized to proceed with issuing a notice of default to the developer. The village board hopes and expects that this project will move forward as planned and with this accommodation. So that is the consensus of the board. So with that,
motion to adjourn.
Yep.
Second.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Where am I?